I have two readings today. First is a Bible reading. It comes from Amos, chapter 5, verses 21 through 24. I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. And the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals, I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps, but let justice roll down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. I also want to share with you an excerpt from a speech from 1975 by Toni Morrison entitled A Humanist View. She says, the very serious function of racism is distraction. It keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being. Somebody says you have no language, and so you spend 20 years proving that you do. Somebody says your head isn't shaped properly, so you have scientists working on the fact that it is. Somebody says that you have no heart, so you dredge that up. Somebody says that you have no kingdoms, and so you dredge that up. None of that is necessary. We are fortunate to have Bruce Pioff with us here today. I always loved your music, sir. I wonder if we could get you to play a song for us.
Yeah, Mark, thanks. Thanks for having me. With inflation, you know, I need that grocery money.
Absolutely.
I had the pleasure of working down in Columbus County in a little town called Whiteville, or as they say down there, Whiteville. And it was through the North Carolina Arts Council, and my job was to go out and play music and do poetry workshops and things like that. But I met a man down there named Mr. Formy Duval, and this song is for him. It's called The Ballad of Mr. Formy Duval. Duval used to have it all. He was a tall glass of water. Worked 100 acres, cornered a backer, and educated son and daughter. Mr. Formy Duval was loved by all in a small Columbus County town. Drove his tractor and truck from dawn to dusk. He was happy as any man around. Now the land won't support the man working the family farm. Mr. Formy Duval, the night's on call, he's the graveyard security guard. Mr. Formy Duval, oh no. Mr. Formy Duval, can you hear me call? His great granddad was deeded the land many, many years ago. Like everyone in the family before, farming's all he's ever known. But Mr. Formy Duval's international truck has a Nissan engine now. And an acre once worth $3,000 ain't worth as much as a cow. Now the land won't support the man working in the family farm. Mr. Formy Duval, the night's so cold, he's the graveyard security guard. Mr. Formy Duval, Lord, Lord. Mr. Formy Duval, can you hear me call? Formy Duval used to have it all. He was a tall glass of water. Stay true.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Well, the three of us were talking earlier about some of the storytelling and that we can find in the Bible. And I just always appreciate your craft of storytelling.
Thanks, man.
Very
natural. Appreciate what you do.
Appreciate that. My message today is entitled Black Lives Matter, a whirlwind of justice and the fierce urgency of now. You might guess from the title alone that there may be, I'm just going to say maybe, moments where I don't sound exactly like a Presbyterian preacher. Yesterday, as I was joining others at a planning meeting for putting local folks on a bus to D.C. to join Reverend Dr. William Barber's Poor People's and Low-Wage Workers' Moral March on January 18th, while I was there, as it was about to begin, I received a call from Mary Smith. Mary is the mother of Marcus Smith, a young man who was hogtied, yes, I said hogtied, by police here in Greensboro and died in their custody because of it. I don't usually take calls just as important meetings are beginning, but with the events of the past week, I had a pretty strong feeling it was an important call for me to take. And it was. Mary asked me for a favor. She asked that if I hadn't already written my sermon, that I address the issues behind the racially motivated mass killings in Buffalo, New York. Those closest to me know that I typically am finished with my Sunday message by Saturday, and mostly I was. But as Mary and I discussed, there is a fierce urgency this Sunday for ministers across the nation to address white privilege, white supremacy, and the delusion of white replacement. I promised her that I would. And she thanked me, and she said she'd be tuning in. So thank you, Mary, and thank you for encouraging me to speak more directly to this issue than my original message possibly did. So we begin with the events of exactly 1 week ago. The racially motivated massacre of 10 black people in Buffalo by a white man whose head was full of far-right talking points about white superiority and white replacement theory. And for those of you who may not know about the conspiracy theory of white replacement, right, the shooter called it in his 180-page manifesto, the Great Replacement. It is the purposely ill-informed deception that there is a plot designed by progressives to replace the political power and culture of white people in the United States. Well, first of all, after this service, if someone could tell me exactly what white culture is, I'd be mighty appreciative of it. Folks online, you can do the same. But secondly, and possibly more seriously, I suppose it is a plot if you consider math a plot. And the thought is not lost on me that some people possibly do. What I mean by that is what they're actually afraid of is the naturally changing demographics of the United States. It is a math problem, not a replacement problem. As a matter of fact, as Cheryl Cashin, a law professor from Georgetown University, recently pointed out in Politico magazine, the event of the mass shooting itself could disprove the Great Replacement. She says, the fact that the shooter had to travel over some 200 miles from his nearly all-white hometown to find a black community concentrated enough to kill en masse proves that blacks aren't replacing whites, In fact, Americans in Buffalo are still struggling to escape the deliberate disinvestment and segregation. So the reality that she points to is the reality that keeps pushing down on people of color and is designed into the system. And that, it is a plot. A plot designed by wealthy white folks to oppress the people behind the undeniable map of the growing diversity of our nation. A plot to oppress them as hard as possible in the hopes the struggles of life will be so overwhelming that the inevitable struggle for power is put off long enough that the rest of the system, through gerrymandering and loading the courts, can be designed to prevent the majority of the diversity that's coming up from being able to achieve true wealth or power. What do we, as people of faith, as a nation, what do we tend to do in response to systems that keep people poor and working low wage jobs? How do we tend to respond? Well, we tend to practice charity, mostly giving handouts rather than giving a hand up by directly addressing the systems of oppression. Or as the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King once said, philanthropy is commendable, but it must not cause the philanthropist to overlook the circumstances of economic injustice which make philanthropy necessary. He called for a whirlwind of revolt against the white supremacist systems of oppression. As I mentioned earlier, people from across the nation will join together in D.C. on June 18 to take part in the Reverend Dr. William Barber's Poor People and Low Wage Workers Moral March. And I have no doubt that the gathering will have echoes of Dr. King's march in D.C. when he delivered the I Have a Dream speech, a speech in which he spoke of the whirlwinds of revolt. He said, "The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until that bright day of justice emerges." Most of us are certainly familiar with many of the powerful and inspiring lines from that speech. Things like, "I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Today, however, I'd like to share with you some of the less frequently quoted parts of that speech. Dr. King said, "In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash the check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was a promise that all men, I'll say people, a promise that all people, yes, black people as well as white people, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on its promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But," he says, "we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we have come to cash the check. The check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice." Finally, continue saying, as he stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make the promise of democracy. Now is the time to rise up from the darkness and desolate valleys of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift up our nation from the quicksands of radical injustice to the solid rock of fellowship. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. Okay, so I need to let you know I have a severe issue with Dr. King's speech. It is an issue that far too people will talk about. An issue that should bring with it the sting of our atrocious reality. An issue that shakes me to my core, and it should shake you to yours as well. My issue is the date on which that prophetic message from Dr. King was given. August 28th, 1963. I ask you, do Dr. King's words seem any less true to you today than when he said them? They certainly don't to me. Folks, I'm a few years past the half century mark, and I wasn't even a twinkle in my own father's eye when that speech was given. That's my problem. As a nation, we have managed to give ear service, we have managed to give lip service to the plight and oppression of black and brown people in America. But I am here today as a minister to pass judgment on the United States for doing little more than attempting to placate people of color. I don't want to hear about the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I don't want to hear about the Voting Rights of 1965. I don't want to hear about affirmative action or the Equal Opportunity Act. I want to hear about why it is still somehow okay to nurture white folk in a way that some think that it is okay to walk into a grocery store and take 10 innocent black lives. I want to hear about how it is still somehow okay for some people, for cities like Greensboro, to defend the actions of officers who hogtied Marcus Smith and killed him just blocks away from where the Woolworth sit-ins were launched a civil rights movement across the nation. I want more than just lip service, because where has lip service gotten us in the past half century? Do King's words ring any less true today? I want systemic change. I do not want even one more name added to the list of folks who were killed because of the color of their skin. Dr. King was right then and he's right now. He had a dream. And we must not only continue to dream that dream, but we also must get to doing the difficult work that is required to make it a reality. We must recognize the fierce urgency of now, of acting now, of protesting now, of demanding systemic change now, of protesting now, of demanding systemic change and becoming a whirlwind of justice now. We begin the needed change by not only giving those in need a hand out if they need it, but by giving them a hand up because they need it. That's the question of charity versus justice. Charity temporarily fixes people so that the system seems to work better. Justice permanently fixes the system so that people have a real opportunity to work better. Or as Desmond Tutu put it, there comes a point when we need to just stop pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they are falling in. You see, love is not complete when it is temporary. You complete love when you give a dollar to the guy on the street corner. It's a beginning, but it's just a beginning. Love begins to extend past the temporary and into the future when, as you hand him that money, you ask him his name. You find out how he got here. You listen to him and don't judge him. You recognize he would not be here if he had a choice. And from his story, you learn how the system in which we live is perfectly designed to receive the results that we see. Perfectly designed to let some snack on caviar while others scrunch for scraps. Perfectly designed to let some jet around the country while others sleep under bridges. Perfectly designed to let some fall into money while others fall into poverty. And then you set yourself to changing the system. You do charity because you must. You do charity because it changes a life for the moment. But you do not stop there. You become an instigator of the mighty waters of justice. You demand justice because from your place in life you can. You demand the justice because it changes lives forever. You become part of the whirlwind of justice. You add your voice and your energy to the ever-flowing stream of justice because you are not willing to sit idly by as systems and the powerful marginalized people of color into poverty in the midst of this world's abundance. You go upstream. You find out why people are falling in, and then you become part of the mighty waters of justice that force the system to change. Dr. King also once famously said, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." However, Dr. King also understood this: the moral arc of the universe may very well bend towards justice, but it does not bend unaided. And I would remind us all that the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Because you see, as he once also said, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. We are the justice makers. We are the benders of the moral arc of the universe. The persistence of our faith in matters of equality, freedom, and justice matter because they are the weight. They are the momentum. They are the actions which continue to move creation further down the arc of justice towards a world that more closely mirrors what God desires for it. We are to be the squeaky wheels of justice for a world sorely in need of that kind of love. The kind of love which creates equality, freedom, justice for all. Amen? Bruce, I'm going to ask you, if you would, sir, to come and share your music with us.
Got to be careful not to trip. Well,
any Greensboroites or here in Greens natives? Okay, so you've had the Greensboro Blues before. This is called the Greensboro Blues. I got the Greensboro Blues for the 99th time. I got the Greensboro Blues for the 99th time. That woman so lovely, she eased my troubled mind. Well, it's coffee in the morning, sugar afternoon. Yes, coffee in the morning, sugar afternoon. Then we go out walking beneath the silvery moon. It's just the simple pleasures keep you alive when that big boss man's talking all that jive. I got the Greensboro for the 99th. That woman's so strong, she eased my trouble, man. When the work's all done, to keep the wolves away. When the work's all done, to keep the wolves away. This poor boy will be looking for a little play. Leave the gossip behind, leave your worry in mind. Leave the gossip behind, leave your worry in mind. Pack up your troubles in a little bottle of wine. It's just the simple pleasures keep you alive. Big boss man talking all that jive. I got the Greensboro Blues for the 99th time. That woman so lovely, she eased my trouble mind.
You want to do one more?
That'd be great.
Thank you. Thanks.
Always enjoy coming over here because Mark always has something interesting to say and timely. It's good working with you. This is a love song called Rosalita, about a guy who's been away from home and he's thinking about his daughter. Rosalita, when that cold wind blows, it's when I always dream of you. Rosalita, when the train comes through, and I'll be on my way home to you, and I'll be tying on my highway shoes. I'll be flying on home to you. So don't be blue. Rosalita, do you remember me, girl? Walking along Tobacco Road, going fishing in that Carolina moon. Love, Mama, she cook us up a meal, and I'll be tying on my highway shoes. I'll be flying on home to you. So don't be blue. Rosalita, my little baby girl, tell Mama and Daddy's coming home. Rosalita, my little baby girl, I ain't never more gone wrong, and I'll be tying on my highway shoes. I'll be flying on home to you, so don't believe it. Rosalita, when that cold wind blows, it's when I always dream of you.
Thanks a lot, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Again, thank you, Bruce, very much. We always enjoy your presence and your storytelling abilities. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Thanks.
Today, for my prayer meditation, I actually want to give you something written by Pax Christi's anti-racism team. I changed it up slightly so that it is more reflective of a progressive gathering, but I'm going to ask you to bow your heads with me now. In our efforts to dismantle racism, we understand that we struggle not merely against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. Those institutions and systems that keep racism alive by perpetuating the lie that some members of the family are inferior and others superior. May we gain new mind and heart that will enable us to see brothers and sisters in the faces of those divided by racial categories. May we have the grace and strength to rid ourselves of racial stereotypes that oppress some of us while providing entitlements to others. Help us to create a church and a nation that embraces the hopes and fears of oppressed people of color where we live, as well as those around the world. Just as Jesus reached across ethnic boundaries between Samaritans, Romans, and Jews, and offered fresh sight to the blind and freedom to captives, may we too break down the barriers in our community. May we see the reality of racism and bigotry, that we might challenge and uproot it from ourselves, our society, and our world. Amen. I give you this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and action bring that love and happiness to all those you meet. Go now in love and go in peace.